Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 26, 2016. We'll begin this half hour with a reading of the obituaries. Colleen Miller, 100, of Sullivan, died 9:06 p.m. Saturday, April 23rd in Mason Point, Sullivan. Graveside services will be 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at Marrowbone Township Cemetery, Bethany. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m. Tuesday at the Reed Funeral Home. Memorials are suggested to the Homeward Bound Pet Shelter, Decatur. Reed Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Eula Mae Shattuck, age 9, of Cedar Springs, Minnesota, quietly departed this life on Saturday, April 23rd. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, April 30th, in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, Illinois. Visitation from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturday. Burial is immediately following the service at Mount Zion Cemetery in Shelbyville. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be made to Extreme Response International, Shattuck Memorial, P.O. Box 345, Snellville, Georgia, 30078. Beverly A. Bork, 68, of Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away on Monday, April 25th. In keeping with Beverly's wishes, cremation rites have been accorded. Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel is assisting with arrangements. Beverly is survived by one sister. We'll turn now to the editorial page, or the opinions page. The first is a featured editorial written by Herald Review staff for today, and the headline is, Be Wary of Legislative Map Reforms. Changing the way Illinois draws its political maps may be the single biggest step toward changing state government for the better. That's why it's important that the opportunity for significant change be presented to Illinois voters on the November 8th ballot. The best solution is the one being proposed by Illinois Independent Maps. That group has collected almost twice the number of petition signatures it needs to be placed on the ballot in November. The number has to be high in order to meet anticipated court challenges. In the past, those challenges have come from friends and colleagues of House Speaker Michael Madigan. So it raised eyebrows when Madigan didn't oppose an amendment offered in the General Assembly by Representative Jack Franks, Democrat of Woodstock. Frank's amendment, which sailed through committee last week and has several co-sponsors, would create an 8-member independent redistricting committee. Franks says he's offering it because he's not confident that the independent map amendment will survive a court challenge. There is also an amendment being offered in the Senate, although it basically maintains the current system of allowing politicians to control the mapping process. Although we'd like to believe everyone has good intentions, there is potential for some political hanky-panky. Franks's amendment, as written, would be acceptable. But the General Assembly can also add amendments to his bill before it passes. Those amendments could change the proposal significantly. The General Assembly also can remove amendments it has placed on the ballot with a simple majority vote. That would lead to voter confusion and none of the amendments getting votes would be passed. Speaking again about Frank's amendment, says those amendments could change the proposal significantly. The General Assembly also can remove amendments it has placed on the ballot with a simple majority vote. If the independent maps amendment were to fail in court, the General Assembly could withdraw its own amendment and the status quo would be maintained. It is also possible that the intent is to place two or three mapping amendments on the November ballot. That could lead to voter confusion, and none of the amendments getting enough votes needed to pass. Democrats, especially Madigan, like the current system because it gives them control over the mapping process. Some Republicans also like the current process because while it keeps them in the minority, it assures some of them secure legislative seats. Political leaders have fought hard in the past to maintain the status quo, and voters should be suspicious of this change. The current system, however, doesn't work for the voters. The gerrymandered maps assure most incumbents a victory, no matter what kind of job they are doing. Despite the worst budget mess in the nation, only 10 of 41 Senate races and 42 of 118 House races in November are competitive. Independent Maps offers the best opportunity for this desperately needed change. That group will turn in its signatures within the next few weeks and then wait for the inevitable court challenge. If General Assembly members are serious about reforming the state's political map process, they will get behind that effort. I'm going to read two letters to the editor today because both clearly focus on local issues. The headline over one is, City Needs to Ensure It is Enforcing Rules Fairly. Momentum, a monthly newsletter from the City of Decatur inserted in our monthly bill, had an article that caught my attention, and I will quote the article here, says the letter writer. Quote, spring is here, which means warmer temperatures and, of course, yard work. Quote, continuing the long quote, the city wants to remind you that landscape collection options are available to help you get and keep your yard and home in great shape. Remember, as a homeowner or resident, you are responsible for landscape maintenance, mowing, weed removal, etc., of boulevards in front of your home and to the alleys that may be located adjacent to your property. End of quote. My concern, says the letter writer, is that there are areas along Airport Road adjacent to the Decatur Country Club, which is rarely cleaned up. I don't know who is responsible for the area. I have also seen the city's grass grow pretty high, and the Decatur Park District also doesn't always keep its house in order. So if the city is going to be fair, let's make sure they are fair to everyone in the city. And the writer is Jerry Lee Harvey of Decatur. The next letter has this headline, Council Should Look for New City Manager. Almost immediately upon arriving in Decatur as city manager, Tim Gleason has been controversial. This stems not only from the firing of the chief of police, but the desire for more taxes to attempt resolution of myriad problems that have arisen during these troubling times. Many of these problems are due to the state legislature and its inability to work together and approve a budget. Gleason has not been shy about appealing for increased taxes and additional or new taxes including property taxes and an additional gasoline tax. There have been recent reports of needed bridge repairs. Can we expect Gleason to propose yet additional taxes for those proposed repairs? The desire for taxation and the outrageous firing of Mr. Sweeney is part of Gleason's apparent feeling that he is all-powerful and can breach procedures such as using police cruisers and officers as his chauffeur for personal out-of-state travel and bullying city employees to support his agenda. I believe that those who were involved in his selection for the city manager position in Decatur could have done a better job. Not only do I believe that a better candidate could have been chosen, I further believe that the city of Decatur should begin another search to replace Mr. Gleason. And this letter is signed by Dennis Minks of Decatur. We'll take a look now at the long column headlined A3 Briefs, because all this information appears on page A3. The first headline, Drug Use Suspected. A Decatur man was found slumped over the wheel of his pickup truck in a fast food restaurant parking lot with a belt used as a tourniquet around his upper arm and a hypodermic needle lying on the floorboards, according to sworn police statements. Officers who approached the vehicle at 11 a.m. Sunday in the parking lot of the Burger King at 1099 East El Dorado Street said the 33-year-old suspect had, quote, pinpointed eyes and trouble standing up. Police recovered a small amount of heroin from the vehicle and a cut-off soda can with burn marks that had been used to cook the drug prior to use. The suspect was taken to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital to be checked for a possible heroin overdose and later booked on charges of drug possession and possession of drug paraphernalia. Next headline, drunken beating alleged. A drunken Decatur man who allegedly sat on top of his equally intoxicated girlfriend in an overpass median while punching her in the head faces a domestic battery charge. Sworn statements say the 27-year-old suspect was in the middle of the beating about 2 a.m. Saturday on the Sands Viaduct when two on-duty paramedics drove up on him. Police say the victim, the mother of the suspect's child, was bleeding from her lower lips and gums, but did not sustain serious injury. And the next headline, shoulder hurt in fight. Police say a Decatur woman was thrown to the floor of a motel room by her boyfriend so violently it dislocated her shoulder. She then asked the boyfriend to shove the shoulder back into place, which he did. Sworn statements said the incident happened Sunday night while the 40-year-old woman and her boyfriend of 2 years were staying at the Soy City Motel, 1828 East El Dorado Street. The woman told police she had been arguing with him when he picked her up off the couch and hurled her to the floor. After the shoulder had been put back, the woman, in agony, said she had tried, quote, discussing the altercation, end quote, with the boyfriend, aged 44. She also called her mother, and then police were called. The boyfriend was jailed on a charge of domestic battery. Another article is about a child care seat check. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital is holding a free car seat safety check in association with the Macon County Health Department from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Friday, April 29th, in the west lot in front of the hospital. Motor vehicle injuries are the leading cause of death among children in the U.S., placing children in age and size appropriate car seats and booster seats can reduce serious and fatal injuries by more than half. Guidelines for child safety in a car seat include rear-facing seat until age 2, forward-facing seat until the child reaches the maximum height and weight limits, booster seat until the seat belt fits across the child's shoulder and hips, and kids in the back seat until age 13. Anyone who would like more information can call Margie Muehlbach at 217-464-2046. Another article from Decatur is about Workers' Memorial Day. Workers' Memorial Day will be marked with a 5:30 p.m. ceremony Thursday, April 28th at the northwest corner of the Macon County Courts facility, 2053 West Wood Street. 19 new names were added April 22nd. The most recent death is that of Robert K. Doty, a truck driver who was killed in a traffic accident last year. 14 were coal miners who died in the early part of the 20th century. Keynote speaker will be Bill Houlihan, downstate director for U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois. The next small article relates to medicine drop-off. The Decatur Police Department and the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, is holding a take-back day where expired, unused, or unwanted prescription drugs can be disposed of from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 30th at the Decatur Police Department, 707 West Southside Drive. The service is free and anonymous with no questions asked. There will be drive-through drop-off process. The DEA can't accept liquids, needles, or sharps, only pills or patches. Medicines that languish in home cabinets are also highly susceptible to diversion, misuse, and abuse. Also, the usual methods for disposing of unused medicines, flushing them down the toilet, or throwing them in the trash, pose potential safety and health questions. Call the Professional Standards Unit of the Decatur Police Department at 424-2743. Next, the Tunnel of Oppression, a guided event sponsored by Millikan University's Office of Inclusion and Student Engagement, will be 6 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, April 27th, and 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, April 28th, in Lower Richards Treat University Center. Visitors should enter on west side at lowest level. Participants will have an interactive experience walking through various situations that illustrate oppression in different forms. Unity Social Justice Advocates is co-sponsoring. Here's an article from Page 8 that has a dateline of Mattoon, and it involves a fire at a residence in Mattoon. A fire Monday morning heavily damaged a residence. Mattoon firefighters were dispatched at 6:40 a.m. to a residence at 905 South 16th Street. Crews found fire and heavy black smoke coming from the east side of the residence. Fire crews were able to enter the residence through a door and extinguish the fire. The fire caused heavy damage in a foyer and kitchen. There also was smoke and water damage throughout the rest of the residence. The lone occupant escaped the structure without injury. No injuries were reported. The cause of the fire has not been determined, authorities report. Emergency responders cleared the scene about 2 hours later. The Charleston Fire Department Rapid Intervention Team, Mattoon Police Department, and Dunn's Ambulance also had personnel on scene. Here's an article written by Associated Press, and the headline is, Researchers, Universal Truth, We're All Liars. Interesting enough, the dateline is Washington. This is the season of lies. We watch with fascination as candidates for the world's most powerful job trade falsehoods and allegations of dishonesty. But if we've come to expect office seekers who seem truth-averse, many of us have given little thought to our own fibs and how they compare with politicians' deceits. For more than two decades, researchers of different stripes have examined humanity's less than truthful underbelly. And this is what they have found. We all stretch the truth. We learned to deceive as toddlers. We rationalize our fabrications that benefit us. We tell little white lies daily that make others feel good. Quote, I feel more worried about lying in public life, specifically by politicians, and in particular Trump, than I have ever been before. That was a quotation from Bella DiPaolo, who is at the University of California in Santa Barbara. She wrote that in an email. When lies succeed, they make it more tempting to lie. Lies can stick. They can have a lingering effect, even if they are debunked. And that's also from this researcher. Children learn to lie at an average of about 3, often when they realize that other people don't know what they are thinking, said Kang Lee, a professor at the University of Toronto. He has done extensive research on children and lying. Lee set up an experiment in a video-monitored room to see if he could catch children lying about peeking at a toy when an adult left the room. At age 2, only 30% lie, Lee said. By age 3, half do. By 5 or 6, 90% of the kids lie. And Lee said he worries about the 10% who don't. This is universal, Lee said. In 1996, DiPaolo, author of The Hows and Whys of Lies, put recorders on students for a week and found they lied on average in every third conversation of 10 minutes or more. For adults, it was once every 5 conversations. Quote, I would say we're lying constantly. Constantly, said Maurice Schweitzer, who studies deception and decision-making at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. Experts split on whether to count white lies, the social lubrication that makes civilized operate, that must be that makes civilization operate, I think is what it means. When your spouse tells you that you don't look fat in that outfit when you do, does it really do any harm? Some lies, Schweitzer said, quote, fall under politeness norms and are not very harmful. There are other lies that are self-interested, and those are the ones that are really harmful. Those are the ones that harm relationships, harm trust. But DiPaolo sees no distinction. Quote, it doesn't matter if the attempt was motivated by good intentions, and it doesn't matter if the lie is about something little. Regardless, society rewards people for white lies, said Robert Feldman at the University of Massachusetts. We'll take a look now at Paul Osborne's City Beat and what he has to say about the police chief issue. This is a portion of his column. What's next for fired police chief Brad Sweeney? Although Macon County Circuit Judge A.G. Weber IV has dismissed a lawsuit that former Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney had filed against City Manager Tim Gleason, Weber indicated that decision doesn't end the case. Sweeney had filed the lawsuit against Gleason because he felt his February 4th firing was the result of retaliation by Gleason. When Weber granted a motion for dismissal of the suit against Gleason, Sweeney's attorney, John D. Robinson, told the judge that he would file another complaint within 14 days, while Gleason's attorneys, Ed Flynn and Jerry Stocks, said they would file a response to the complaint within 14 days. Judge Weber indicated that he was skeptical about another complaint. Being filed against Gleason, because in other cases, it has usually been the employer, in this case, the city of Decatur, that was held liable instead of the individual. While this means that Gleason is probably off the hook as far as this case is concerned, the city of Decatur is not. As Judge Weber indicated to both parties, this is far from over. Then Paul speculates that any further lawsuit against the city would deal with the city council, and that the argument would be that had the council not hired Gleason, he would not have been in a position to fire Sweeney. And it's clear to Paul Osborne that, as the judge said, this issue is far from over for all parties involved in this dispute. Here's an interesting piece of history. On this day in 1777, a 16-year-old girl named Sybil Ludington, she's sometimes referred to as the female Paul Revere, she rode her horse into the night through Putnam and Dutchess counties in New York to alert militiamen that British troops were sacking Danbury, Connecticut. And the thought for today is this: a good scapegoat is nearly as welcome as a solution to the problem. And the author is unknown. This has been Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald Review, dated April 26, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again next week.